Welcome back to Tome of Tales. Set in the Cantus Expanse, this episode is a session write-up run by Guido for the London RPG community on August 19th and 26th, 2020. The session was a two-parter called Tea with a Serpent. In it, I played Cheryl the Fey-Touched, a halfling bard from the Feywild. Strong wings beat against the hot air currents over New Hillborough. From their vantage point, the Fey Bard and the Winged Unicorn can see Bibi's tent in her flower field on the edge of the growing village, and recognize the shapes of Bane and Taffeta, who are already there. Cheryl had not been to the halfling settlement much, except a few times she came to see her furbolg friend. There was a new addition, a camp for the young ones. A soft smile spreads across her face as she thinks how fun that must be for them. Astra lands on the soft grass, a little away from where the others are, and Cheryl raises a hand in greeting. As she dismounts, she spots Mace walking down the track, curiously surprised to see him there. A moment later, Bane spots him as well, and then turns away, grumbling something, to Taffeta, which Cheryl cannot hear but can only imagine what it must be. Things just got a little more interesting. Cheryl muses to Astra. Her companion stomps her hoof in response, and then the two of them make their way over. Bibi comes out of the flower fields, bouquets of flowers in her arms, telling them all to gather beside her tent. She offers an earthenware cup of tea to each of them. When she goes to hand one to Cheryl, a smaller mug, painted green with yellow dandelions on it, an imperceptible shudder passes through the smaller woman. Cheryl is momentarily back in the Raven Queen's temple, in the vision of the slain halfling family around her and the broken pottery strewn everywhere. From across the bond she shares with Astra, she feels her friend's strong presence, like a guiding star in the night sky, and the memory of the vision fades. She politely accepts the drink and sends a quiet word of thanks to the Winged Unicorn.
I'm here for you, Merla.
And I am glad that you are, Astra.
Looking around at the others, Cheryl surmised that out of all of them, she and Bane might know the most about where their journey would be taking them. It was clear Mace knew next to nothing, claiming he was more intrigued in where they were going, and if he could help Bibi on the way, then all the better. He had no interest in gold for this expedition, which took Cheryl by surprise. Though she knew him well enough that he would be on the lookout for any potential opportunity that could benefit him. Bibi stayed standing, whilst the rest of them were sitting on the soft grass, or the various mismatched wooden stools and log stumps. Cheryl sipped the tea she had been given, and was pleased by the blend. A beautiful lavender tea, with honey, and the slightly sweet taste of apricots.
We had some dealings with Yuanti stuff several months ago in the desert.
Bibi begins, looking at two of the four gathered.
Bane and Taffeta were there for those parts, which led to some bad decisions on my part that had to do with the one serpent. Basically, I nearly released it.
Cheryl's eyebrows shoot up.
But I didn't actually release it because of, well, I still don't quite understand how, but anyway.
Off to a great start, I see.
Astra observes with a chuckle, and Cheryl smiles into her cup.
We ended up going to a special temple on the astral plane. Whilst we were there, something spoke to me. A voice, which I kind of recognized, but I'm not really sure where from. But when it spoke to me, I got these tattoos.
Bibi holds up her arms to show off the glowing, fae-like serpents that wrap around her wrists, up her forearms, and past her elbows.
And then with a lot of people's help.
The firbolg continues with a nod to Bane and Cheryl.
I've done some more research. Apparently, what spoke to me and gave me these weird tattoos is an ancient fae serpent called Eagle, who lives in the Feywild. Its exact location, I am not sure of. But there was an old folktale I heard which said there's potentially a portal north of the Angelbark Forest that could take us close to where she lives in a frozen lake.
Cheryl's brow furrows slightly, and she glances at Bane.
In terms of what Eagle is actually like, I don't know. But I do know we need to be cautious when we approach them.
Bibi's eyes fall on Cheryl, and they share a look.
I wasn't able to get you any information about where they are, Bibi. When I asked Queen Titania about Eagle, she said she has no dealings with the serpent. By choice. To me, that sounds like she has spoken to them in the past, but the Summer Queen did caution there are few things more dangerous than a fae with a plan.
Cheryl hesitates a moment before saying softly,
I got the sense that she does not want to be involved with it. That there may have been something that happened in the past. Though that is purely my own speculation. Queen Titania did not say as much.
She pauses again.
They've never given me a reason to think of them as anything more than a snake.
Cheryl looks into Bibi's eyes and lays a hand on hers.
I know before I was excited and wanting to help you in any way I could. And that is still the case. I want to help you, Bibi, in any way I can. But if even the Queen of Summer is cautious about this serpent, then maybe we should be too.
In the present, the silence stretches out for a moment too long.
Any questions?
Bibi asks them. Yes, Mace says, raising a finger. Once we meet this Eagle person, what is our objective? What do we want to get out of this engagement?
Well, that's a good question.
Bibi shifts from foot to foot.
I want some answers. Just to talk, maybe. Oh gosh.
She thinks for a moment.
I guess I haven't been entirely honest with any of you as to why I really want to talk to this Eagle.
Should we be worried? Astra asks, coming to stand next to where Cheryl is sitting.
Not if it's what I think.
As you all know, my magic is a bit weird. And it's been the cause of a lot of bad things in my life.
Bibi's green eyes fall to the ground. And Cheryl can see the ghosts of painful memories flicker like flames across her face.
Including the reason I had to leave home many years ago. I'm hoping that when I talk to Eagle, I'll find out some answers as to why I have this magic. Maybe they gave it to me. I'm not entirely sure. But I would like to talk to them. If they did give me my magic, I don't know why they did.
You said you recognize the voice?
Bane asks.
From a very long time ago. It's a vague recollection, but I can't put my finger on why I recognize the voice.
Bane leans forward. Listen, Bibi. No matter what happens, I'm here for you. But be ready. You might not like the answers you get.
Bibi sighs and nods.
I've been prepared to not like the answers for a very, very long time.
Good. Then I don't need to know anything else.
The half-orc leans back, and his hand goes to Frankie's side, giving him some scritches. Mace chimes in.
Answers don't usually come free of charge. It sounds like what you really are looking for is peace of mind. That's among the most expensive goods I traffic in, and on much less significant problems and issues. Are you ready to pay for whatever this Eggle will be charging you?
I thought you only dealt in knickknacks, Mace, if I'm being honest.
BB muses. Mace raises an eyebrow, but the pleasant smile doesn't slip from his face. She holds herself a little straighter.
In my mind, I feel like Eggle owes me. They have been the cause of a lot of issues in my life.
They might not necessarily feel that way, Bibi.
Cheryl interjects, feeling the need to caution her.
We don't know if they are completely Fey or not. Regardless, Fey are not to be trifled with, be they full or only partial. We all need to be careful and cautious when dealing with this. But my question to you, Bibi, is do you want to keep this magic, or would you want to give it away?
Judging by her friend's reaction, she has hit the nail on the head. She presses on.
You might have to think about what your answer may be, depending on what we find.
Bibi nods, a panic starting to alight in her eyes.
Cheryl's hands make a calming gesture. You don't have to know what you'll do right now, but I want you to be aware that you might have to give up something like your magic, as May said, if it is going to give you the peace of mind that you think you want.
Cheryl relaxes back, and she smiles up at Bibi.
Whatever you decide, we will support you. We'll make sure that whatever you choose will be the best for you.
Fuck me, but I hate that place.
Bane mutters under his breath. Cheryl looks at him, eyebrow raised, and he raises a hand.
No offense.
She gives him a nod. He turns to Bibi.
No offense. That place is fucking wild.
Taffeta was the one who came up with the idea of asking Aurelia to teleport them to Rowan's Glade in the Angelbark Forest. It was the closest they were going to get to whatever this portal was, and it cut down on the journey time considerably for them. Meeting Rowan was a pleasant surprise. Cheryl did not know much about the glade, but would ask Taffeta a bit more about it on their journey back if she could. The halfling woman seemed to have lived there for a period of time, with her family at one point, and thus was on very good terms with the Dryad herself. When mentioning where they were heading to, Rowan had offered directions freely, which was not a common thing the Fae did. Cheryl did not want to seem presumptuous, so she had made a point of thanking Rowan personally, bowing to her as one might in the Fae courts. They had kept a slow and steady pace as they took the more cautious trail through the forest, Taffeta in front guiding their way, with Bane in the back, ready to draw any unwanted attention towards him. The journey on that first day was calm, though they were all careful to keep any conversations they had to a low murmur. Cheryl guides Astra at first, but her companion got used to the way they were traversing, and was able to keep up with Taffeta's pace fairly easily. Having thought ahead, Cheryl cast a tiny hut of magic for them to sleep in on that first night. It had been quite some time since she had last slept out in the wilds of the lands on an adventure. In a way, it reminded her of her early days in Cantus, back when she was still new to a lot of the ways and customs of the material plane. Her sleep that night was peaceful, no ravens or shadows fogging her mind. The next day was a little tougher. Taffeta kept up a relentless pace, despite their agreement to be cautious. Cheryl kept fidgeting on Astra's back, and though the winged unicorn did not say anything, Cheryl could tell she was getting to her wit's end.
"Are you all right, Merla? Perhaps we should try flying for a bit."
"No, we should stay with the group. I just..."
A shiver trickles down her spine, and Cheryl turns to look behind her. She sees a shadow in the trees behind them, or thinks she does. But then the branches shift and there's nothing there. She goes to face forward when she notices Bane is making louder noises than usual, like he's trying to draw attention to himself.
"Something's wrong."
Then she sees it. A horribly tall, pallid-skinned humanoid shape with glowing red eyes that are locked on Bane. Its arms hang low on its body, hands nearly scraping the ground as it stalks towards the half-orc. She's too far away to get to it, but then she notices the other creature accompanying it, an Erinyes. Astra takes to the skies without needing to be told, the flurry of her wing beats alerting the others to what is about to happen. As they fly overhead, Cheryl sings out a call to Bane, an inspiring battle cry. Then she runs her right hand across her harp strings, pulling the magic into her hands, getting ready to unleash a synaptic static charge that will get both the devil and undead. The gangly undead creature charges at Bane, but before it can make a leap to close the distance, Cheryl releases the built-up static energy she's been holding onto. The Erinyes clutches her head in pain, but the undead, a bone claw, merely stumbles and continues its charge towards Bane. A shiver passes through her, and Cheryl is suddenly overcome with an unrelenting feeling of dread. She looks around at the trees Astra is flying amongst, and she swears she feels something watching her. Oppressive wings ready to swoop down and take her away.
"Astra!"
she shouts in a panic across their bond. Sensing her fear, the winged unicorn turns away from the fight playing out below. As the shouts of the others fall behind her, Cheryl feels the gem in her circlet burn against her forehead, and a flash of light radiate out from it. She blinks, feeling some charmed effect lifted from her mind, and breathes a sigh of relief. It was not the Raven Queen she had sensed. There are no shadows here. No ravens, just her. Astra and her friends. Her friends.
"I am all right, Astra. A charm meant to frighten us. 'Twas all,"
Cheryl says aloud, trying to reach through to her flying mount. It seems to do the trick, as Astra shakes herself, glancing back to her mistress.
"Merla, I don't know what came over me."
"Do not dwell on it."
"Come,"
Cheryl says, her voice pitching lower, as for the first time in months, she summons the very essence of the summer court into herself. Her features become even sharper, whilst her skin takes on a golden, shimmering glow, and the topaz blue of her eyes gets overtaken by a flickering, magenta, yellow, and gold light that is both mesmerizing and terrifying. When she speaks again, she is all fey, no part of her mortal.
"Let us bring down a summer storm upon them!"
Astra calls out in the golden hourglow, and Cheryl feels her heart leap up to the stars as they charge back the way they came, the winged unicorn's moonstone wings beating against the sky. The trees zip past them as they fly over the battlefield. Cheryl sees the Erinyes next to an ash-colored skin male that Bane is looking at with intense hatred. And something else she can't quite put a name to. No matter. She gleans that this person is the one who orchestrated this ambush. He will be the epicenter of her storm.
drawing forth a chip of magical mica from the celestial strings of her harp. Cheryl holds it between her first two fingers, and then sings out a note that crosses the distance. A thunderclap the likes of a midsummer storm explodes between the two flying above a large fallen tree. The Aerneas takes the brunt of her spell, but the male holds fast, shooting a glare of minor irritation at her, before he focuses back on the half-orc. The two come together, Bane being assaulted by the bone claw on one side already. He does not seem to care. His attention is all for the devil flying toward him. For what else could he be but something from the lower planes? Cheryl witnesses Bane's strength and how he brings his maul down, a burst of radiant sunlight smashing into the ashen devil's sword arm. For a moment, it looks like he is about to drop his sword, but only through the legendary hellish strength of his kin is he able to hold fast. The smile that had been taunting Bane finally falters.
"Don't go, Tazir," Bane says. "Stay a while."
A thought tickles at the back of Cheryl's mind. Something Bane had mentioned to her once in passing about no more deals. She cannot say for certain, but she wonders if this devil he fights so vehemently is one of those who had set the scene for the deals to occur between Bane, Varys, and wherever the Grand Master had been trapped when he died.
Merla?
The branches of the trees shift as the shadows beneath their boughs start to dance, their soft rustling building into the sound of beating wings. Astra's eyes dart to those feathered shadows, but she does not see anything there. She does feel something within looking at her mistress, and Astra hedges away from them cautiously. As Cheryl unsheathes her rapier, the shadows cross over to the Fey Bard, draping themselves over the cloak on her back, making the feathers lose their luster.
"This will be the last song you hear."
Tazir teleports away from Bane, taking off into the air once more as he does. Cheryl and Astra swoop over the half-orc to stop in a whirl of wind that makes the devil turn around to see who is pursuing him. With the shadows clinging to her, the cloak of many feathers fanning out in the air behind her, Cheryl has become a vision of dread, come to bring the might of thunder upon him. "Drop your sword!" What comes out is not only Cheryl's voice. It is the voice of the shadows, of ravens, and the unerring command of the Daughter of Summer. Tazir's eyes go wide at seeing her, this vision of a summer storm cloaked in a dread gloaming. But then he sneers as he realizes her words do not affect him.
"Only my lady gets to command me."
The shadows flicker across Cheryl's face, and for a moment, a paler visage framed in dark tresses can be seen in place of hers before it is gone.
"Then you shall be put down."
A merciless wave of thunder blasts into Tazir, forcing him closer to the ground. He tries to get his bearings whilst he is still in the air, but from just below him, Mace's voice rises up, mockingly.
"Hey, buddy! How do you make holy water? You boil the hell out of it!"
The devil starts to laugh and falls the rest of the way to the ground, landing with a hard thump. Hearing Tazir's laughter is unpleasant, demented, and grating. Cheryl wants to shut him up, but sees he's looking over at Bibi.
"Bane, dearest of all my acquaintances, do you still have those shackles I sold you?"
Mace inquires, all business. Cheryl looks back and sees the bone claw has turned into sludge, but the Aerneas is still up.
"Way ahead of you."
Bane responds. Before he can make it over, Bibi tries to cast something, but her magic goes wild. Cheryl sees it reverberate back onto her, and an explosion of fire drops at her feet. There's a panicked moment where Cheryl thinks Bibi is gone, incinerated by her own magic, and a different sort of cold dread washes over her. But she sees the Firbolg still standing in the stream, trying to put the flames out. She turns back to see Bane has knocked out Tazir with the back end of his cinder maul, and is just about to clamp the dimensional shackles onto him, when the Erinyes, enraged and in a panic, charges him. Her fury does her no good, but one slash from her sword does see Bane wince as poison tries to enter his veins.
"Will someone please get her off my back?"
Bane shouts. He looks up.
"Cheryl, fucking just kill her!"
The shadow passes over her face once more.
"Don't worry," she says in a voice that is not her own.
Cheryl flourishes her rapier as she descends upon the fiend. Astra strikes out with her mighty hooves, hitting the Erinyes in the head. Dazed, she cannot bring her longsword up to block Cheryl's rapier, as it cuts a deep wound down her front. The blade hums in her hand, wanting to dance. She tosses it up into the air and it spins, flipping end over end, to then fly forward and impale the Erinyes in the back, right between her wings, ending her existence on the material plane. The rapier returns to her hand. Then Astra flies over to where Bibi is sitting in the stream, the flames of her unintended fireball extinguished. Dismounting, the Faebart lets go of the essence of her home, feeling more than just summer's warmth leaving her. Cheryl doesn't focus on that right now, though. Instead, helps Bibi to her feet.
"Are you all right?"
she asks, worry creasing her brow. Bibi gives a little nod.
"I guess it's a pretty horrible reminder of why I'm here in the first place,"
she mutters quietly. Bibi reaches up to a crown of purple crystals growing out of her head.
"At least I got crystals this time. Ow."
She pulls her hand back, and there's a small nick on her finger.
"They're very pointy."
"Do you want me to remove those?"
"Yeah, if you could. I feel like sleeping with these would be a little difficult."
Cheryl nods and gestures for Bibi to bend down. Taking out the jar with the butterfly clasp from her handy satchel, Cheryl takes a coin-sized amount of the diamond dust within. Then, standing on tiptoes, she brings her lips close to where the shimmering crystals are on Bibi's head. She starts to sing a soft incantation in Sylvan as she sprinkles the diamond dust over the menacing crystals in concentric circles. The moment the dust touches them, the crystals start to dissolve. But the spell is not done yet. It needs a final seal. Cheryl places her hands on either side of Bibi's head, then brings her friend's face towards her, Cheryl's soft lips leaving a warm kiss on her tall friend's forehead. When she pulls away, the crystals are gone.
"There. Done,"
Cheryl says softly, a warm smile on her face.
"Let's get the rest of you sorted."
Together, the two of them work to shape water and prestidigitate Bibi into looking and smelling less singed and more like a fresh field of lavender. Bane comes over and lays a glowing hand on Bibi, and Cheryl sees her stand a bit easier.
"Are you okay?" he asks.
"Yeah, I am now."
After a little bit, their conversation turns back to Tazir, who is hogtied and draped across Bane's mount.
"Look, I might not be able to stay," Bane starts. "I need to take this guy somewhere I can make sure he stays, until I can take him back to the Hells and kill him.
That's too long a journey to do on your own, Cheryl interjects. I can send a message to get someone to come here, so we can deal with this now.
She looks at Tazir's unconscious form, and an echo of that rage during the battle passes over her face.
It's too dangerous to leave unresolved.
Can you tell Varys?
Bane asks her. She nods, anticipating whom he would suggest. Pulling up her harp, Cheryl plays a minor F chord progression as she casts her message back to Daring Heights.
Varys, we have captured Tazir.
He tried to ambush us.
Ask Aurelia to scry on Bane. Together, teleport to us so we can resolve this.
Cheryl feels the half-elf commander take a moment to process her unexpected message. Then he is moving.
Understood. The counselor and I will be with you as soon as possible.
Bane was busying himself with securing Tazir, adding a gag so the devil can't silver-tongue his way out of his bindings. Taffeta looks a bit shaken, but all right otherwise. Meanwhile, Mace keeps an eye on their surroundings, but makes sure to steer clear of Bane. It hasn't escaped any of their notice that the two do not get along. With a sigh, Cheryl tries to relax, going over to Astra to brush her down a little with magic. But it's hard to let the tension in her go when there's unfinished business that needs to be dealt with. And then there is what happened when she called upon the essence of the Summer Court. It had felt different this time, like something else was answering her call, too. Astra is looking at her, and Cheryl lets her hand rest against her moonstone-colored side.
I know you may wish to speak of what you saw, but I promise, later. I cannot dwell on it right now, Astra. Not with.
The large equine reaches out with her muzzle and lightly bumps Cheryl's shoulder. This elicits a tiny smile from the Fey Bard and a nod of gratitude. Aurelia and Varys arrive before the hour has passed, stepping through the portal that opens 30 feet away from their group. The councilwoman's face is a mask of determination, paired with her ever-resplendent air. Varys looks grim, greeting them with a silent nod. The two make their way over to their temporary resting spot. Margrave, Bane's mount, still carrying the unconscious devil on his back. Aurelia looks at Tazir.
So, you truly have the fiend with you? Shackled and gagged. And what do you want to do with it?
Take him back to Daring Heights,
Bane states. She raises an eyebrow, giving Bane a pointed look.
You'd like to take this Arcfiend to my city?
Varys clears his throat quietly but says nothing. Aurelia throws him a quick frown.
What if he is put in a pocket dimension? Somewhere he cannot escape from.
Cheryl offers, nodding at Aurelia.
We need to put him somewhere secure, until the Order and whoever else wants to be part of it can take him to hell and kill him there, so he can't terrorize anyone else.
Bane insists.
This seems sensible.
Aurelia agrees, nodding. She looks between Cheryl, Bibi, Mace, and Taffeta.
Why did he attack you? Is there something more we need to be afraid of?
He says he wants to try and kill the god we're looking for,
Bibi says cautiously. Varys' frown deepens, but the councilwoman merely gives her an intrigued look, gesturing for her to continue.
He really wants to make sure the Yawanti tribe have absolutely no chance of living. I don't think they do anyway,
she adds, looking down for a brief moment.
But Tazir thinks he has the capability of killing this god. I don't know what his plan is, But he knows the location now, so maybe he can.
This news that Tazir knows where they are heading, and that he plans on killing Egil, is a surprise to Cheryl. Seeing a worried expression painted across her friend's face only makes her feel more uneasy. That they should not tarry for too long.
I take it you know quite a lot about these Orc fiends.
Aurelia asks them. Cheryl glances at Mace, whilst Taffeta, Bane, and Varys nod their heads.
They never act on their own accord. Who is it we have to be aware of?
Galassia,
Bane says, his voice flat.
I see, is Aurelia's simple response.
She thinks for a moment.
Your plan might work, but you'll be at risk of drawing the attention of Galassia herself. I will help you, though I certainly won't bring the fiend to Daring. I'll try and use my magic to hide him, whilst you come up with a plan.
She nods to Varys and Bane. The pale half-elf finally breaks his silence.
Will she be able to find him?
I'm not infallible.
Aurelia states matter-of-factly. You're dealing with a very vengeful patron, and that's something you need to be aware of. Still, I will try to deal with the unconscious archfiend. For now.
Varys looks to Bane, and then nods to the counselor.
Aurelia steps past them towards the giant elm tree, a glittering wand already tracing somatic patterns in the air. Cheryl follows her, trying to track the symbols she creates, but it's magic beyond her ken. Then Aurelia finishes the sequence, bringing her hands together in a clap, and at the same time, a shadowy door appears on the nearly flat trunk of the mighty tree, the sound of its hinges creaking open. She turns back to look at them all, and gestures to the door.
Try putting him in there.
Together, Bane and Varys bring the unconscious body of Tazir over and unceremoniously deposit him into the dark stone room. Without so much as a backward glance, the two come back out, and the shadowy door closes behind them, the echo of its shutting lingering for a moment longer than any normal door would.
I've made it so only you, Aurelia, and I can unlock the shackles,
Bane says softly to Varys. Varys nods, then looks to Cheryl and the others.
Will you return with us to Daring?
We should press on,
Cheryl says, glancing at Bebe. Bane continues past them back to their little camp.
We've still got something to do,
Bebe agrees.
But thank you for the offer.
She had been so caught up with how Bebe was doing after the fight that Cheryl had completely forgotten about Tazir's sword. She sees Bane pick up a cloth-wrapped blade, the ashen metal peeking through momentarily, before he carefully wraps the cloth around it again.
So long as he doesn't plan on using it,
she mutters aloud, and the feathers of her cloak ripple in the soft breeze.
That's the Feywild,
Cheryl breathed, her voice coming out soft and quiet. Her hand lifts up, and she points.
It's there.
Astra pushes through the brush, and the branches part before them as the two enter the large clearing. The pull she had felt is now all around her. The Feywild has cast itself over the material plane. A bright, beautiful blue sky trying to impose itself on the dull, rainy day. The leaves of the trees flicker from mundane green to vibrant teal-blue purple. Cheryl carefully dismounts from Astra, the winged unicorn kneeling down to make it easier for her to do so. The moment she is off, Astra turns to a bush and starts delicately eating the berries that only she can seem to touch.
The pond is a still mirror. Not even the delicate butterflies of light fluttering over its surface, disturbing it.
I will go on from here with the others. Stay here, Astra. I will return.
The winged unicorn locks eyes with Cheryl and blinks in acknowledgement.
Can you ask your horse to keep an eye on mine?
Bane asks as he ties Margrave to a nearby tree.
I am more than a mere mundane beast of...
She will,
Cheryl says with a smile.
Astra stomps her hoof,
and the Feybard does her best to keep herself from laughing as she continues her rant across their bond.
You can talk to her directly, if you want. She can be a little sassy sometimes, though.
Astra tosses her mane and looks away, going back to the berries on the bush. Bane gives a little chuckle.
I wonder where she gets that from.
Suddenly, there's a high-pitched scream. Reminded of what Bibi had said after their fight with Tazir, Cheryl utters the words,
Lareth ath Athir!
And her feathered cloak suddenly becomes wings. Taking off from the ground, she flies above the lake, gets to the middle, and then dives straight down. She trusts the others are following her lead. The moment Cheryl touches the surface of the water, she feels the familiar magical pull of a portal drag her through its depths to the other side. Blinking, the Feybard looks around and sees she is now flying above an island of earth and rocks in the middle of a lake so dark its depths cannot be seen, though its waters look to be crystal clear. It nearly gives Cheryl vertigo. Then she feels the awakening of emotions, the ones that always come to life when she returns home. She hears the others arriving behind her and looks back at them. They see her for how she truly appears. The imperial topaz in her circlet is a small, bright sun, her golden blonde tresses shifting in its light, with lowlights of fiery peach and pink. Her sun-kissed skin shimmers golden whilst her armor and clothes are vibrant and beautiful. It is almost painful to look at her. Another high-pitched scream rings across a bridge that leads to another island in front of them. They see a throne and a figure, a female, with fiery red eyes and red hair being surrounded by flying creatures made of smoke and vapor. To Cheryl, they look like fairy dragons, but larger. One of them attacks the female, and she screams again.
That's her. That's Aegle.
Bibi exclaims.
I feel like we need to protect her.
Cheryl darts forward, across the bridge, trying to gauge if the smoke dragons are actual enemies or not. She had just seen one of them attack Aegle, but there was something odd about their movements. Still, the only way she could know for sure was if she tried something. Choosing a point between two of the nearest vapor dragons, Cheryl unleashes a blast of psychic energy, her spell severely damaging them. Their bright red eyes look at her as they recoil. But so does Aegle, who also lets out a cry of pain.
I don't think we should be attacking the dragons either,
Cheryl calls out, looking back. Taffeta is right behind her, Mace only a little further away, but she does not see where Bibi and Bane are. When she turns back around, they have teleported to the dais in front of Aegle. A sickly green light originates from a point left of the large stone throne, aimed at Bane. There's a moment of unreserved panic as she senses how wrong the magic is in that beam of energy. Either Bane is the luckiest man alive or someone was looking out for him, because he braces himself against the onslaught, his armor protecting him, rippling against the force of the spell whilst his holy symbol glows bright. Taffeta steps forward, levels her crossbow, and shoots at the origin of the disintegration beam. Her bolt makes contact, and the spellcaster suddenly becomes visible. She's a slim, pale fey woman with dark hair in an elegant black dress, her eyes a bright red with fiendish light. Something about the female makes Cheryl's heart uneasy, and it takes her but a moment to realize why.
Unseelie fey!
Bane rushes over to the fey woman, his holy symbol of Lathander glowing brightly. He raises his cinder mole, and the unseelie fey's eyes go wide as she sees him bring it down upon her. It doesn't take much. Bane is a raw force that has been honed into precision, and the fey crumples to the ground, unconscious. The tension in Cheryl's shoulders eases a bit as he starts to bind the unseelie fey's hands and feet. In the stillness, the conversation Bibi and Egil are having draws her attention.
Was right.
The fey serpent whispers, almost too quiet to hear. Cheryl flies a bit closer.
That has meant for you. My mark has cost you so much. And I am sorry for that. Will you ever be able to forgive me?
Bibi looks confused, worried, hurt, but also hopeful. Cheryl isn't sure what's going on, what she has been saying to her friend, but her Queen Mother's words of warning are echoing through her head. Still, her experiences on the material plane hold her back from acting rashly. She continues to listen to their quiet conversation.
Is there a way I can control this?
Bibi asks in a whisper.
Is it permanent? Can I stop it, what you gave me?
These creatures flying above the lake.
Egil says, gesturing to the now docile smoke and vapor fairy dragons.
And those priests you've met, I see their signs on you. They all believe me to be their goddess. Nothing can convince them it is not the truth. But their faith has given me powers. I am willing to spend them to become the god they believe I am. If you are willing to believe in me yourself, I can take away the wild, uncontrollable magic I gave you and turn it into something divine. Would you like me to do that?
Cheryl's brow furrows in concern. It seems Bibi has the same thought.
Yes, but if you become their god, does the one serpent become a thing? Because I really don't want that to happen. That would not be a good thing.
I don't know, Wildflower. I never was a god. I guess I will see what happens.
Egil takes Bibi's hands in hers.
Maybe their faith will go to someone else and I'll be free. Maybe I will become a god, as they say, and I will know there and then what the future will be. Right now, I'm just that lonely creature that looked at you as a child and saw, maybe, can I hope, a friend?
Egil's words resonate within Cheryl. She sees how naive a creature she is despite her agelessness. The Fey Bard has no doubt she is powerful enough to help Bibi in the way she wants. It is more a sense of aimlessness, a lack of direction, and even control that Cheryl can sense from the female sitting on the stone throne that makes her hesitant to believe. Still, some part of Cheryl knows Egil has no ill will towards Bibi, that her honest wish is to not be alone. It is to be loved.
Wildflower, I have been scared. I was scared and saw you in my dream. I was scared and you came to me. And yet I've done so much harm to you.
Egil holds back the tears in her eyes and smiles kindly at Bibi.
I will take my chances and see what being a goddess truly means. If it means anything at all.
There's a pause as Bibi looks at Egil. Then she nods and says,
"Okay."
All of the smoke fey dragons start to swirl around Egil and Bibi, drawing into the red-eyed female. Then there is an eruption of such raw and powerful magic unlike anything Cheryl has ever experienced before. Her vision turns white, and she feels it reverberate all the way down to her very bones. When she can finally open her eyes again, Egil is gone. Bibi stands alone in front of the giant stone throne, but Cheryl can sense she has changed. There is a faint, harmonic rainbow glow that radiates out from just below her ribs. It softly pulses for a moment, before it fades into Bibi, still there, but not as visible. As it dims, Cheryl notices Bibi's skin isn't as vibrantly blue as before, and she seems to have returned to her original, towering height. Gone are the fey serpent tattoos on her arms too, replaced by beautiful wildflowers of all kinds. Bibi turns to them as a huge smile spreads across her face.
"I think I just helped make a god."
Bane rushes over to give her a hug, Taffeta following behind him. Mace brushes by Cheryl, tucking something into a pocket as his eyes lock onto something just behind the throne. It comes to no surprise when he pulls out what looks to be a very old chest and starts rifling through it.
"Classic Mace,"
Cheryl thinks as she turns around. Her eyes come to rest upon the unconscious and bound unseelie fey woman. She thinks for a moment, then makes her way over to her. Cheryl kneels down next to the fey, trying to see if there's any indication of which fey court she could be from. But the last traces of potent, charming magics are falling away from the female's closed eyes. Cheryl's lips set into a stern line as she starts to untie the ropes binding her feet. She breathes a quiet word of healing, and the pale fey woman opens her eyes. She looks around, confused, and then her eyes lock onto Cheryl. The fey bard keeps her face impassive and stern, just like her queen mother's, as she offers her hand. "Where am I?" the woman asks, raising one hand and seeing her hands are expertly bound in rope. Her eyebrow twitches in annoyance, but she carefully accepts Cheryl's help to stand.
"You're in a place you probably weren't meant to survive,"
Cheryl answers in Sylvan. The fey tilts her head, curious.
"Am I your prisoner? Unless we have cause to keep you, you can go."
She nods to Cheryl, going to reach for something, but again, her bound hands make it difficult. Cheryl smiles politely, but there is no warmth. The fae scowls as she cannot find what she is looking for.
"You've already stolen from me,"
She seethed, a menacing expression flickering briefly across her face, before she manages to school her features again.
I will leave, if you let me.
I'm sure you'll find something to replace what was misplaced.
Cheryl replies, all cordial politeness.
So that's what you took, Mace. Smart.
There's a pause as the Fae studies her. Clearly, she was not expecting someone who would match wits with her so easily. She tries another tactic.
May I ask the name of she who has been so magnanimous today?
The Fae asks, voice dripping with false sweetness.
You may.
But I will not tell. Cheryl replies, a slight edge to her voice despite the pleasant smile. The Fae's own smile drops from her face.
You may recognize me, if we cross paths again.
I will for sure recognize you. There is a beat as she realizes she cannot get anything from Cheryl.
If you let me, I'll be out of your hair. By all means,
Cheryl says, hand gesturing in front of her in an after-you way as she steps back. Her eyes flash with mischief as she looks at the Fae woman one last time. Good luck. The Fae inclines her head to Cheryl, eyes briefly darting behind her to glare in Mace's direction. Then she stands up straight, with all the dignity a Fae could have, and softly mutters a few sylvan words. One moment she is standing in front of Cheryl, and in the next, she is gone, motes of dark magic swirling like starlight to fall onto the rocky island beneath her feet. This has been a write-up of the session, Tea with a Serpent, run by Guido, set in the Cantus Expanse, a long-running 5th edition D&D campaign, run by the London RPG community. Bibi was voiced by Rhianne Vardellion. Varys Nalo was voiced by Gwythian Evans. Interested in playing games with us? Want to find a place to run some games? Why not join us on Discord? If you wish to help support Tome of Tales, please consider buying me a coffee. All links are in the description. Thank you for listening. Tune in again for the next chapter in Cheryl's story.